David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hello, everybody, and this is Stacy from The Advisor. And today I'm very excited because we have a very special guest. She is one of our experts on the show. She is part of our podcast community. She has her own podcast on our series, and her name is Ellie Young. Ellie Young is an alcohol-free coach, and she's also works with hormone balancing. So she has expertise in different areas, and she's very knowledgeable. She's amazing to work with, and she's been such a great asset to our community and the information she provides. So Ellie, tell everybody a little about yourself, what you do, and I'm really excited to talk about today. Yeah, you're going to talk about hacking the physical drinking habit. This is really interesting to me. I can't wait to hear more about it.
Yeah, thank you, Stacy. As always, it's such an honor to be here. I'm really enjoying putting together this series with you. So I'm an alcohol-free life coach and a hormone balancing expert. And again, that just kind of follows my natural journey from giving up alcohol in 2021. I'm over 3.5 years alcohol-free now. And along that journey, I got into hormone balancing because I was in my 40s and I recognized that, wow, alcohol had a huge impact on my overall health. But once that was out of the way, I was still experiencing a lot of changes. And so that put me into the hormone balancing and learning how to cycle sync and really be proactive in perimenopause. And it was just that I've now taken everything I've learned, and I coach women in programs and one-on-one. And it's a really cool intersection of women in their 40s who are struggling with this decade of health, losing control of what really used to work for them and no longer works, but they're still using alcohol to kind of cope with the stressors of life, and also believing like it's the fun, it's the good in life, right? So yeah. I'm helping women kind of like wake up and say like, hey, a lot of your health, you know, irregularities right now can be improved drastically by cutting alcohol. And then once that's out of the picture, we can really fine tune your hormone balance and kind of minimize the suffering that is so characterized by perimenopause and menopause. We can't eliminate it altogether, but we can minimize it significantly and make these years about thriving instead of just surviving.
Yeah. And that's so important. We don't want to just go through life surviving. We want to feel like we're thriving. We want to feel like we're on top of the world, you know, right. And that's what it's all about, you know. And I, you know, so tell me more about the hacking, hacking the physical habit, because that really sounds really interesting to me. I'd like to learn more about that.
Yeah. So our first episode that we did was all about the mental side of confronting a change in your relationship to alcohol. So that was really breaking down these subconscious beliefs that keep you stuck. This next part is about your day in, day out, hacking the physical drinking habit, because even if we have like started to plant seeds in our subconscious that, wow, alcohol is really not great for me, you still are confronted every single day with just the ubiquitousness of alcohol. It is everywhere. It is going to be in our face. There is going to be constant temptation, constant opportunity to drink. And so how do we actually, you know, change that, change our environments? It really comes down to the physical environments we're placing ourselves in, as well as mental environments. So I have adapted this from James Clear. He's, you know, famous author of Atomic Habits. It's an incredible book, but you can really use this model to apply to any habit. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you guys through the cue, craving, response, reward habit loop, and how you can utilize this to hack your physical drinking habit. So the first step in this habit loop is the cue. And the way that how we want to structure this is we want to make the drinking cue invisible. Mm-hmm. Really hard to do, almost near impossible with the amount of alcohol that's in our culture, right? But the amount that you can minimize that just within your own household, right? It's putting away the wine bottles. It's putting away the, you know, the little funny signs, the memes that talk about drinking. You know, people have dish towels that say it's wine o'clock, you know, things like that. Any sort of, you know, visual cue that's going to trigger you to drink, eliminate those as much as possible. I joke that, like, no, you can't eliminate your children, which are often a big cue for most people to drink. I know they were for me, like that 5 o'clock witching hour when things are stressful and you're trying to make dinner. You know, we can't always arrange our lives to eliminate these triggers that make us drink, but becoming aware of what ones there are and how many you can eliminate is half the battle there. And this also means, you know, again, it's your physical environment. So it might mean avoiding certain people. It might mean avoiding certain places. And I want to stress that this is temporary. Like, you don't have to do this forever, but when you are trying to break this habit, you do need to support yourself as much as possible in the environment you're placing yourself in, because our environments shape us. And I love to just look at nature for a good example of this. I just took a trip up to Washington to see my family. It's completely different up there, right? The landscape, the beach, the forest, the trees, the things that grow. It is all shaped by the environment. It's different. Right. So if you want to create change in yourself, you can't keep showing up to the same exact environments and expect yourself to change. You have to intentionally change the environment that's going to shape you. So this is a big one. It's so eliminating those cues. Do you have any feedback on that? Or do you want me to carry on to the next one?
No, I like the fact that you mentioned about changing your environment, because I know many people that, you know, have become really reliant on alcohol and they want to stop, but yet they're, you know, I knew one person, he was, he had an alcohol problem and he became sober, but he was still a bartender, you know, and it's like, you know, so, you know, you're really putting a lot of pressure on yourself when you're in an environment where if you're trying to break the habit of drinking and you're trying to, you know, change your life in various ways, the environment you put yourself in makes you part of that environment. Whether you realize it or not, you will start behaving in the ways that the people around you, you'll start doing similar things. And you may not think so. You may say, I'm my own person. Nobody can influence me. But, you know, subconsciously, we do mimic our environment, whether we realize it or not. And that's something people have to really take seriously, because let's say if you want to be an achiever, then you have to be around achievers. If you want to be, you know, sober, you have to be around sober people, or you have to be around people that are going to support your sobriety, you know, and not, you know, not do anything to put you at harm's risk, you know. And I like the fact that you say that you really have to look around, and anything that's a tempt factor, anything that will put a thought in your head, anything that will make you feel like you want to grab a drink and you want to, you know, you want to go against what you know in the back of your head is not right, you know, you have to eliminate those things and put yourself in the safest environment possible.
Yeah. And this loop, this habit loop, it cues the cravings. This is because the brain is really efficient. It wants to just put things on autopilot. And so when you're setting yourself up by placing yourself in that environment, your brain is like, oh, I recognize this environment. Let's run this loop. And so you're really fighting the friction of your own brain. Your brain's like, wait a minute, this is what we do in this environment. And so it's no wonder we have cravings, and no wonder it's awkward, and no wonder it's difficult. But again, once you kind of hack this and you step back and you can observe it for yourself, you go, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And so I'm just going to avoid certain people in certain places until I get this habit sorted out. So the next step in this is the craving. So the cue to drink is going to trigger a craving. And this can happen mentally. There can be mental cravings to drink, and there can also be physical, biochemical cravings to drink, because the brain is so darn adaptive that it recognizes that you're in a drinking environment, and it will proactively release dynorphin, which is the neuropeptide that is responsible for kind of countering that seesaw effect. So when the brain drink, when you drink and you get that big dopamine boost, your brain releases dynorphin to even you out. It's always trying to create homeostasis. So the brain, being as proactive as it is, will recognize you're in a drinking environment and proactively release the dynorphin in anticipation of that alcohol coming. So it's going to pull you low before you've even started drinking and actually create like antsiness and discomfort in your body. It is a craving to drink. And a lot of people, when they have that first drink, they think, oh, that really took the edge off. That felt good. Oh, the drink is what made me feel better. When actually it is the drink itself and it's a long-term effect on your brain that has created this void of dopamine. And so it's like an itch that you're getting to scratch, but it created that itch. So you can reset this. You will be able to reset this eventually, but you would be so surprised how far into your sobriety you can get. And you'll go into an environment and you will experience a craving to drink. And you're like, whoa, I haven't felt this in a really long time. And that is the brain remembering this environment. So what we want to do with that craving is we want to make it unattractive. And this gets into some mental work because we have to remind ourselves that we have to catch that thought. There is a thought happening. Like, I believe with this cue in this environment, alcohol is going to help me do X, whatever that is, relax, connect, have fun, have joy. And then we have to investigate it. Like, is that really true? And when almost 100% of the time, it's not true. Alcohol is going to raise your anxiety. It's going to depress you. It's going to, you know, detach you from your prefrontal cortex where you're not going to be present and able to like experience the full breadth of this moment. And so reminding ourselves of that starts to make that craving unattractive. And we get this moment where we, again, we are pausing and we can witness the craving thought and we can witness how it makes our body feel like, oh, this is a craving. This is what I'm thinking. And this is what it's doing to my body. And then you have a moment to go, I can intercept this now and I can do something different. So this is called, this tactic is called leaning into the craving. And this is something I work with my clients extensively on because we expect cravings to happen. They are natural. And instead of trying to avoid them and run from them and resist them, I want you to step and like look at the craving in the face and be like, it's one, it's just a thought. Two, it's just neurochemistry that is creating a void of dopamine in your body. And you can replace that dopamine with something else other than alcohol and feel good. So take a step back from the craving and we look at it and we realize it has no power over you. It's really just, it's not going to kill you. So many times we're like, oh my God, I'm so uncomfortable. You know, and then we want to satisfy the craving and then we feel shame. And so when we take this little process, and again, it's easier said than done, but visualizing this step is like, okay, I expect a craving to come up. I expect it to feel this way. I know what my brain's going to try and talk me into, and I'm going to have a go-to plan instead.
Right. And
it works. It really works. So I set my clients up with like a little ritual that they can have like at the ready, a little go-to plan. And so this kind of takes me into the next step here, which is the response. We've got the cue, craving. Now we're into the response. The response is literally the drinking behavior, like you picking up the glass, pouring it up, you know, whatever that is. We have to make that step as difficult as possible. And you make it difficult by just making it hard, like eliminating all the alcohol in your house. Again, said than done. If you have a partner that still drinks, they're probably not going to love you taking all the wine and throwing it out or taking all the beers out of the fridge. But if they are supportive of you, you know, removing it and making it as, again, hard to drink. Like if I really wanted to drink that, I would have to get up and drive down to the store and do it. That requires a lot of energy, a lot of like momentum and a lot of space for me to say, no, I don't want to do this. So make it as difficult as possible, the response to drink. And the next step is the reward. So we want to make the drinking reward that our brain is like craving, that dopamine boost, we want to make unsatisfying. So this is very similar to the craving. We're making the craving unattractive. We're making this reward unsatisfying. So this one, you have to, again, go back to that thought work, that mental step and say, I'm going to play the tape forward here. What happens? I think I want this drink. I think it's going to make me feel good, but what ultimately happens? I'm going to have a hangover. It's going to wreck my sleep. I'm going to wake up at 3 a.m. with anxiety. Even for women, I'm so sorry. Even after a glass of wine, we often wake up with that 3 a.m. anxiety. We just don't feel like ourselves the next day. We have kickstarted that roller coaster of anxiety, depression, stress, adrenaline in our body, and it's just not worth it, right? Yeah. And you have to, like, it's like reverse brainwashing. We have been conditioned for decades to see alcohol as the solution. Yeah. You have to condition that out of yourself, and that is making the drinking reward unsatisfying. This is not gonna bring you joy. This is not going to relieve your stress. This is not going to help you connect. It's going to actually dull your senses and limit experience. And so you just have to continue to hear and continue to have those thoughts at the ready to combat this moment in your brain, when your brain is going to whisper to you like, hey, that drink sure sounds good right now. And you have to be like, no, it makes you hungover. It makes you fat. It's going to wreck your sleep. Don't do it. You know?
Exactly.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Yeah. So this is, again, it's our environments. We are hacking our physical environments, and we are also hacking our mental environments. And this is tough. This is tough stuff, but it can be done.
A lot of times I would try to put a vision in my head where, okay, if I do it, this is what I'm going to feel like or look like tomorrow, you know, and, you know, I do that with like a lot of things, just not even alcohol, but like, even like eating those midnight cravings, those, you know, when you're laying in bed and you want to grab something, you know, okay, I've been trying to lose 10 pounds for the last 10 years and I haven't done it yet. But if I, you know, if I eat this ice cream cone, oh my goodness, you know, do I want to look like I look now, or do I want to look, and I imagine myself 10 pounds like skinnier, and that would automatically like make me lose the craving, you know. And I think it goes the same with alcohol, you know. If you think about the after effects, you know, do I really want to wake up with a hangover? Do I really want to go on the scale and be 3 pounds heavier because I have all this sugar in my body? Or do I want to look at my stomach and then see, you know, my belly hung over? You know, it's like, you know, these are not things that, you know, are attractive to a woman. This is something that would actually, I think, in your brain, for most women, want to nix it.
Yes, I agree. And that brings me to another tactic that's so helpful in this, is that visualization. And I make my clients, we meditate, just very short and very sweet, but we close our eyes and we draw a connective thread from the person that's in the moment right now to the person the next day. And we're like, so often we put things off to this future self as if it's somebody else. Like, oh, my future self will handle that. Like, my husband and I do this to each other all the time. Like, we never want to break down the boxes that we get from Amazon. Our it's an ugly habit of the amount of stuff we order. And then we'll just throw the boxes in there. We won't break them down. We're like, future Ellie will break down those boxes. And there's never a better time. Future Ellie doesn't have more time or more energy to break down those boxes. And so I'm always like, let's do the thing so future Ellie will be very proud of past Ellie for doing it. That is the kind of energy you need to connect to your future self with. Like, that's you. You want to set yourself up as best as possible and visualizing not just the pain points. I think this is something maybe that some people, the further they get into their sobriety, the pain points kind of fade. They are like, the hangovers don't remember being that bad. And they're like, oh, I could probably have a drink. I'm okay now. I'm good, right? And so sometimes the pain, I call it the stick, is not enough to keep you sober anymore, right? And so you need to reward yourself. You need to have more carrots dangling in front of you. And so you can also gamify it and be like you said, like visualizing that future self that's 10 pounds lighter, that's sleeping like a baby, that is connecting with their kids and having a lot of fun and trying new things. Really meditate and create those possibilities in your brain. This is going a bit into the next step of my program, which is like building a life you don't want to escape from. But once the brain starts to like see it, even if it's just a figment of your imagination at this point, it wants that. And so it's going to like help you head in that direction. More opportunities are going to present themselves, and energetically, you're just going to feel more pulled in that direction instead of just focusing on like what you're giving up, how awkward it feels, how deprived you feel. Energetically, when you are working from a place of hope versus a place of deprivation, it's so powerful.
Right. Oh no, definitely. Definitely. I think all those tactics are really useful. You know, you really have to, it's a series of tactics, and you just have to like, you know, make it do it so much to where it comes natural and you don't even realize that you're actually doing it anymore. It actually becomes and part of your natural lifestyle. And it, and as things get, you know, as you start to become sober for a longer period of time, you are going to forget, you know, what it was like. You know, you go, oh, like you said, oh, it wasn't that bad, you know. And then you have to really think about the consequences. And then you have to really think about, okay, how was I back then? You know, and you know, what did it make me feel like back then? And you have to kind of remind yourself, you know, you have to kind of bring yourself back in the past for a second and think about the things beforehand, you know, before you became sober. And do I want that for myself again? Because the biggest thing is when you see an addict, you know, a person who gets addicted to drugs or alcohol, you know, that need, you know, like you were talking about that, you know, the chemical, you know, change in your brain, you know, they get their up and then they get their down, and the down is the worst feeling. And so they're desperate to want to feel that up feeling again. So then they go back and they go back for the alcohol, or if they're a drug addict, they go back for the drugs because they hate feeling that down moment. And I think it's really important that a person too has to really be happy with themselves and really want to be serious about keeping themselves in that happy moment. Okay, life is grand for me now. How do I keep it like that? You know, and really think about it in that respect too, I think would be helpful.
Yeah. And I mean, I have seen a lot of clients kind of get like 6 weeks or so under their belt, and they kind of are like, I'm doing it. Like, I'm great. I'm good. And they'll slip up and, you know, they're kind of devastated about it. And it's really, we have to treat these like data points that like, okay, we're not meant to get it right out the bat. You have a lifetime of alcohol, you know, whispering to you, and it's not you, and it's not your fault, and it's not like you are flawed and this is just, you're an unlucky person that you're built this way and other people can handle it and you can't. It's not like that. It's really alcohol is doing exactly what it's supposed to do to your brain, which is be addictive, take you on this ride and make you feel like shit afterwards. And then there's the shame on top of it. So when it starts to whisper to you, and it will, that's to be expected. We have to just sit back in it and remind ourselves, one, how far we've come, and two, envision that future self that's pulling you forward. And let that really like, let that be the golden egg, you know, like if the stick is fading, the memory of the bad hangovers is fading and you're like, you know, I should be able to have one. This is how it always starts for people. I'm just going to have a drink this one time, just tonight. Right. I'm just going to have one glass. It always turns into two. It turns into two or three nights. And then the shame eats at them and they come back and they go, God, how did I let that happen again? And they're not alcoholics. They're not raging. They're not having benders and, you know, crashing their cars. It's just this little slippery slope. And at the end of the day, I tell them like this, if you're okay with this, I'm okay with this. But if some part of this is leaving you like, I don't like myself when I'm doing this, I don't have integrity, I'm not able to operate in my life with the same energy, the same passion, I'm losing that again, then we address because, you know, some clients do go back to like, hey, I'm going to moderate, or I'm on special occasions. I would argue that whether alcohol should be used for a special occasion or not, what makes it special? But if they want to do that and they feel okay with the consequences, then that's fine. It's all about how you feel in your relationship to it. And most people want to drink less. Yeah. I rarely meet anybody who's like, I drink just the right amount. You know, it's perfect. It's like, I don't know about that, you know, because it just doesn't make you feel good. And, you know, but we feel like we're sacrificing so much by giving it up. And that's the mind shift. We have to go back into this place of like, you are gaining. You are completely gaining. You are leveling up. And I even joke with my husband about this because he still drinks occasionally. He's in the work world where he still has to go out and entertain clients all the time. But I'm like, everybody's drinking at these events, honey. I'm like, if you are not drinking, you are like dominating them in the mental space because you're sharper, you're more with it, you're quicker. You know, everybody thinks that alcohol is like helping them like get along with everybody. I'm like, no, it's actually making them all look a little bit like idiots, you know? Like I can easily tell. Like my husband called me last night from San Francisco. He's working and I can tell right away he's had some wine. Cause he's like, how could you tell? And I'm like, well, your jokes aren't as funny. Like you just don't sound as funny to me. You're not sharp. You're not with it. You know, he wasn't as quick. And I still love him and we laughed it off and stuff, but I'm like, yeah, it's like really obvious to me. So like you kind of have this huge edge over people when you're not drinking because you have your full capacity. You have your brain working on all cylinders and it's a gift.
It is a gift. It really is. It definitely is. And I don't think people realize, you know, how they seem. They just feel good at the moment and they're just going with it. But like, just like, you know, when cigarette smoking was more popular than it was today, you know, it's still a lot of people smoke, but, you know, a lot of people less now. But, you know, when it was so popular and people were smoking those Marlboro and they were smoking Marlboro Lights and stuff like that, you know, nobody ever realized how bad they smelled until they stopped smoking. And then they're like, oh my God, is that what I smelled like? You know, because, you know, you had this tremendous, you know, tobacco odor after you smoked cigarettes. But nobody realized it until after they decided to stop. Like, oh my God, I smelled like that, you know? And then they were like, you know, mortified by it.
Yes. I mean, I still have like phantom memories that come back to me of like,
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
What used to be like, oh, that was a fun, crazy night. And I'll remember it now and about just like how sloppy I was, right? And it was so normalized at the time to be sloppy. And I look at the pictures and there's just countless pictures of me for like a decade of just like half-masked eyes, rosy cheeks, just kind of half there, right? Yeah. And that's hard to look at. That's a tough memory. You know, when I go back and I look at myself now, like I have a lot of compassion for that person. I don't regret everything I did because it got me to where I am now. I love her. And I know that she was doing the best she could with the tools that she had and the information she had at that time. You know, and I look at my parents' generation, you know, the same way they raised us. It's like, of course, we're going to raise our kids differently. They didn't have the same information we have now. But this information now is out there and it really can change you if you let it. Again, you have to have an open mind. You have to be willing to challenge these deep-seated conditioned beliefs about alcohol and its necessariness in our culture. And you have to be like, is it really necessary? You know? Right. And so it's once you do that thought work and you start kind of poking holes in it, then you can get into this cue, craving, response, reward and be like, okay, how can I set up my environment to really shape me into this non-drinker or whatever you want to call it, moderating drinker. And I challenge moderating because What ends up happening with moderation is you just spend so much mental energy calculating how much you're going to drink, when you're going to drink, how, when you're going to cut it off. And the thing is, there's always going to be an opportunity to drink. So if you always say, I tried this at the beginning, I was like, I'm only going to drink on Fridays and Saturdays. Well, that quickly turned into Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, it's just, and then, okay, there's a birthday on Tuesday. And, oh, well, this is this event. So you just, you're constantly negotiating with yourself. And when you really eliminate it, that's why I tell my clients, like, give yourself a 30-day gift of perspective. Take a break 30 days. That way you have enough time under your belt to really experience what it's like to be alcohol-free, and you free up your brain. Close the door completely on this opportunity to drink, because then you free up that space in your brain. And you're like, oh, what am I going to think about now? Now that I'm not thinking about alcohol and how much I'm going to drink every every hour of the day.
Exactly. I think people, you know, a lot of times I hear from a lot of people, like, you know, I'm so like on edge, or I'm like, you know, I'm kind of like a stick when I'm not, you know, drinking, and, you know, I don't know if I'll really be a lot of fun around people if I don't have a drink, because I don't know how to really, I have a hard time loosening up. And I hear that from a lot of people. They don't think they would be a lot of fun to be around if they don't drink.
Yeah. And, you know, and that goes back to these beliefs about self. We have beliefs about alcohol that are about the substance. And then we have beliefs about alcohol that are about the self, where it's like, I'm not enough without this substance. And that's a big one for women, right? We drink to tolerate a lot of dissatisfaction in our life. And we also drink it because we think we're not enough. Like, we need to amplify and boost confidence and, you know, limit our insecurities. But at the end of the day, it's not real. It's artificial, and it's actually creating more depression, anxiety in your body. And the trade-off there, and like connecting the dots, that's what we need women to hear, is just like, there's a better way. And yes, it's going to be awkward because we haven't lived without alcohol since our teen years. We haven't socialized. We haven't celebrated. And you can do it. You just have to be willing to just experiment and start saying, what does my body really need? How can I really reward myself?
Right.
And it can be fun.
It'd definitely be fun. I don't think people, you know, I think it is too many, you know, stereos, like, basically like myths, you know, like we grow up in a society where, you know, people say the same thing over and over and over and over again. And then, you know, you hear it so much that you kind of believe it, you know, and, you know, and, you know, thinking that you're not going to be as much fun if you don't drink, you know, and alcohol, you know, helps you have a good time, and, you know, things like that. People keep that in their head, and then they think they have to drink when they don't have to drink, you know. And alcohol, if you really think about it, if you want to look at it from a health perspective, is one of the worst things you can do for yourself. You know, alcohol and tobacco are probably the two worst things, but yet they still sell like crazy in the United States. But, you know, it's healthier to smoke weed than it is to drink alcohol, you know, when you have to compare the two to get, you know, back to back. You know, but, you know, it kills your liver, you know, and along with a lot of other stuff too, you know. And, you know, it's just, it's something that you have to just really, you know, kind of like yourself, you know, 'cause I think one of the biggest things is denial, you know, denial that you have a problem, you know, like when you are always, you know, thinking that you have to have alcohol in order to have a good time. You have to have alcohol because you're stressed out. You have to, you know, you can't cope without it. You know, you need it. Once you that word need comes into play, that's when you know that you definitely, you know, there's an issue that has to be addressed in your life, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that I don't ever want to draw lines in the sand about where the criteria is for someone to confront a change. I mean, If it's not showing, just this awareness a lot of times for people that it's not showing up in a way that is supporting them, you know, that it's taking and it's giving, and only you can know that, right? Like, only you can deep down know, but most people are kind of living in the dark. and unaware that it's contributing to so many of their other problems in life. And again, that gift of like giving yourself the perspective is so huge for the people, because they don't realize how much it was holding them back. And so I don't want it to be like, you know, if you meet X, Y, and Z criteria, then you have a problem and then you need to, I want it to be aspirational. You don't even really need a reason. It can be, you can be like, just like you, where you're like, I have a drink or two on the weekends here and there. It can just be like, instead of it being like, I don't want to ever do that, it's more like, I want to feel my absolute best. I'm in my 40s. I want to live my best health. I want to have a longevity. I want to do as much disease prevention as possible. I want to have hormone balance. I want to metabolically be set up to like live my best life. And so alcohol doesn't fit in that picture. So again, it's building this hopeful future of yourself and your goals and your dreams and being like, alcohol doesn't fit in there. It just doesn't. It's less about like cutting, you know, being like, oh, I only do it so much. Do I really need to remove it? Versus it doesn't fit in this beautiful future I have built for myself here.
Oh yeah, 100%. I think maybe you could touch base on, you know, there's so many women out there that suffer from menopause and are going through perimenopause, or they're going through menopause, or they're post, you know, menopause, and they like to drink, but what is alcohol actually doing when you're going through hormone imbalances and you're trying to stabilize the way you feel? Because there's so many symptoms that occur and so many problems that occur when you're going through menopause. You know, what does alcohol do to the body when you're going through that stage of your life?
Yeah, I'll touch on this for sure. And this is something we can get into more depth in our later episodes. I will deep dive on this for sure. But just a brief overview is basically, a lot of people don't know you have to detox hormones out of your body. And so much of what women are suffering from, especially in this decade of life, is hormone imbalance. And it's coming from the toxic food supply. It's coming from alcohol. It's coming from our stressful lives. And our liver is responsible for detoxing all of that out of our body. And when you're drinking, the liver prioritizes detoxing the alcohol, and it cannot detox the excess estrogen in your body. So your estrogen gets reabsorbed into the bloodstream, creating estrogen dominance. And 8 out of 10 breast cancers are hormone receptor positive, which means they need estrogen to grow, which is why there's such a high correlation between drinking and breast cancer. So it's really scary stuff, and nobody really knows about it. And on top of that, alcohol wrecks your sleep. And when we aren't sleeping, it damages the two most important hormones in our body that actually sit at the top of the hormone hierarchy, which is cortisol and insulin. So it's raising your cortisol, that's your stress. It's raising adrenaline in your body. And when that happens, it squashes your progesterone. So estrogen and progesterone are supposed to be working in tandem. They work off each other and balance each other. So if alcohol is now raising your estrogen and it's squashing your progesterone, it's further exacerbating that ratio and that balance. And that's where we're with just awful, what we would call PMS symptoms, but we just chalk that up to being a woman. We don't realize that, like, oh, it's actually me drinking, me not sleeping, the stress, the toxic food, and my liver not being able to function properly. And this is a huge thing. So it's wrecking your sleep, raising your cortisol, and then additionally, it raises your insulin resistance. So your blood sugar is going to go up in the morning after a night of drinking, which raises your insulin. And when this happens over time, you become insulin resistant, which is at the crux of like every aging disease, heart disease, diabetes, all the metabolic health syndromes. This is the crux of it, is insulin, and alcohol is wrecking that.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I never really thought about it in that aspect when you're, you know, because the first priority is alcohol. You know, and if it's focusing on trying to detox the alcohol out of your system, it can't give as much attention to the imbalanced hormones and everything else that's going on in your body and, you know, getting rid of the toxins in your body so your hormones can be balanced. And, you know, that's a great point. That is a great point.
Yeah, that's probably the easiest step someone can take when they want to get into, you know, a lot of times they're like, oh, I want to go get my blood drawn and find out what's going on with my hormones. And it's like, regardless of what's happening with your hormones, the treatment's the same. It's really eliminating as many toxins as possible. And that's not just like eating organic and avoiding the pesticides and the hormones in your meat. It's the yeah. number one toxin you're exposing yourself to is alcohol. It's every organ that it touches, it damages the cells. It literally damages the mitochondria within the cells of every organ that it's touching. And the mitochondria are like the little powerhouses of the cells. Everyone's going back to like seventh grade biology, right? With the cell diagram and the little mitochondria. And it makes something called ATP, which is the energy needed to make that cell function. All of the different cells all up and down your body, they all have different functions. They all release different proteins and send different signals into the body. And when you are damaging the mitochondria of every cell, it can't function properly. And that's why you get disease and dysfunction among every cell that it touches.
Right. So true. So true.
And it's a heavy handed thing to hear this kind of stuff, but like, we've never heard it. I mean, this education shouldn't just be like, tell kids not to drink. It's like, no, actually tell them what it's doing to their body. Right. Exactly. Like, this is why it's addictive. This is what it's doing to your body. Yes, it's everywhere. Yes, you're going to get exposed to it. Yes, I fully expect that they're going to try it and drink it, but I want them to go into it with eyes wide open so that they can not be kind of bamboozled into thinking like everybody gets to drink and there's just a very unlucky few that have like a bad reaction to it or bad relationship to it and end up as alcoholics, you know, or the DUI. You know, it's like, no, this is destructive no matter what volume you're drinking, and you can choose to do it or not. It's just like choosing to eat, you know, a bag of Takis. My seventh grader is obsessed with Takis. Dust. I mean, it is like crack cocaine to him, and it's awful. It's banned in other countries, the Red 40, and it makes him crazy, and he farts and he stinks, and it's just like, dude, that is a toxin, and look at how it's addicting to you. That's the biggest comparison that I can give him with alcohol. It's like, you are obsessed with it. You want it, even though you don't really want it, even though you know it's bad for you.
Right. Exactly. And you know, it's the same thing. You know, our industry knows what's bad for us, but yet it still sells it. You know, it makes it available to the public. You know, it's kind of sad. So, you know, you really have to fend for yourself. You have to really realize, look at yourself and, you know, what is good for me? What is not good for me? What's destroying my life? What's, you know, holding me back? You know, because sometimes it's just, you know, you mentally, you know, you really want to look at, you know, what is it doing to me? And, you know, how can I change my mindset so I can, you know, overcome it and stop it, you know? And, cause I think sometimes people don't look at the big picture of what it's actually doing overall to ourselves. You know, they're just the moment at that moment, they're looking at their environment, like we talked about, you know, and then they're just going with it. But, you know, overall, you know, what is alcohol really doing to them overall as a person, you know, health wise, you know, emotionally, you know, you look at the whole overall picture and it's kind of scary.
Yeah. And sometimes, again, if the pain of that stuff isn't enough, sometimes if you just aren't like, it's not that bad, I haven't made a huge mistake, I haven't, you know, damaged too much things, why would I give it up? Then it really is just about being aspirational. It's like, I want my best health. I want to go after that. I want to be able to be on all fours wrestling and playing with my grandkids someday. And and so alcohol gets in the way of so much health that to me it's just like, oh yeah, cut it. I don't want that a part of my life. And learning how to enjoy yourself without it now can be such an adventure. Like, I have changed so drastically, and the opportunities that have opened up for me and my willingness to go and try new things and meet new people, it just continues to unfold and expand in such a beautiful way. And I want people to know that, like, let my story and like build hope for you that like, no, you're not going to live your life the same way. No, you're not going to want to go do the same things because you're not drinking anymore. You're going to want to do everything else that this world has to offer. And you're going to have so much energy and so much ambition, and it's going to wake up stuff inside you that you're going to be like, oh my gosh, that's right. I used to love this and now I'm going to pursue it and now I'm going to chase it. And it's just it's exciting.
Because you can't really pursue your dream when you're drinking alcohol. You know, the next day you don't feel good. You feel tired. You feel sluggish. You may feel like unfocused, you know. And how can you pursue your dreams in life? How can you enjoy your life when you are consistently, you know, picking up a glass of alcohol?
Yeah, it derails you. It derails your ambition and it keeps you small. And, you know, as women, we have done enough sacrificing, you know, and so this time is a time when we have to wake up and be like, okay, this is not serving me. It never was. And now you get an opportunity to kind of break free and try something new.
100%. Now, if you had to take everything we talked about today and you wanted to emphasize some important points to the listeners, what would you like to emphasize?
Your environments shape you, and being intentional about the environments you're placing yourself in and the people you're around, the content you're listening to, the books you're reading, the shows you're watching, it's all shaping you. And if you want to create change for yourself, using this tactic, the cue, craving, response, reward, and tweaking those things by making the cue invisible, making the craving unattractive, making the response difficult, and making the reward unsatisfying, that is going to really help you start to kind of pull the levers of your environment and set it up to shape you into this future self you want to be.
Yes, 100%, 100%. Now, what are some of the services that you provide on your website and some of the different things that you do to help others?
Yeah, so I have a course to help you kickstart your break from drinking, and that is called the Brave Course. It's ongoing at any time. It's something I developed with the exact lessons that I used to help me break free from my drinking cycle. I also do one-on-one coaching. So this is the Brave Course is a great place to start. And then you can hop on a call with me and find out if one-on-one coaching is something that you want to do. I used a coach for the first 4 months of my journey and it completely changed my life. It's a big reason why I'm a coach today. And if alcohol is not something that is a huge kind of hurdle for you right now, I have the Balance Challenge. And this is something I run every other month. I'm actually doing one right now in July. So is this going to launch this podcast like right away, like tomorrow or something? Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's actually a little late to join this one, July 10th. So I'll be running the new one in September. And this is a 28-day challenge to balance your hormones. So I teach you how to cycle sync, which is living in rhythm with your hormones, how to cycle sync your nutrition, your lifestyle, your exercise. And we also do releasing alcohol. So it is an alcohol-free challenge for 28 days to balance your hormones. And so, yeah, look for the next one of those in September 1st. You can join the wait list on my website.
That's awesome. And can you tell
everybody where my website is? Findmyselffree.com. And additionally, I have my own podcast. It's also called Find Myself Free. And you can find that on Apple.
That's awesome. This has been great. I think what you're doing is amazing. I think it's well needed in our society. I think a lot of people need to break free from alcohol. I think they, you know, you don't need alcohol in your life in order to feel, you know, your best. You know, you to feel your best and to be your best, you should be alcohol free, honestly. You know, and it really does play a role, you know, in how you feel, how you perform when you do drink, you know. And like you said, you know, that temporary fix is temporary. And then you get there's side effects afterwards. So is it really worth it? You know, you have to really think about that, you know. And you know, I love the fact that you're teaching people how to break free, and you're doing it in a very different way. You're not doing it like they do in AA. You're not doing it like, the norm that a lot of people teach. You have a very unique way of helping people to break free from alcohol, and it seems a lot less pressured, and it's you know, you can walk in there and there's no pressure. You know, you don't hear certain words, you know, that you hear when you're doing AA programs or you're doing other programs, and I think it's less, you feel less pressure, and you're doing it because you want to feel better, you want to feel good, you want longevity, you want to enjoy your grandkids, you want to enjoy your family, you know, and you go, you take a different approach, which I think is really very beneficial. And I want to commend you on that, because that's awesome. I like the way you're going about it. And I think everyone who, you know, really anyone that's thinking about breaking free from alcohol really should look into using you, because I think, you know, if you're thinking about it, there's a reason why you're thinking about it. And then maybe you should go and pursue, you know, and take, you know, take the big leap, you know, and move forward. Definitely.
Yeah, let's follow that intuition. And that intuition will get stronger and more clear the more that you are living alcohol-free, and you have no idea where that will take you into such positive trajectory in your life, not only for you, but that of your family as well.
100%, 100%. Well, this has been great, Ellie. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this conversation before we go?
No, but just thank you so much. Oh yeah, the next episode that we will do about a month from now, we will get into the third step of my program, which is building a life that you don't have to escape from. So it really is about, like, okay, we've tackled the mental work, we've tackled the physical habit. How do we now craft a life that inspires us and excites us and is filled with all sorts of other ways to boost your dopamine and reward yourself and grow?
I love that. I love that, because I feel a lot of people, they're living a life sometimes where they're not happy in it. And, you know, sometimes just making certain tweaks and changes in your life can change your whole life, you know, around, that you don't have to run. There's ways to fix things and make things better. So I love that concept. Definitely. I'm looking forward to our next podcast together. This has been an amazing time together. Thank you so much, Ellie, for being on the show. And I look forward to our next session together.
Likewise. Thank you, Stacey.
You're welcome. Thank you. You have a great day.
You too.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good. Except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.